Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is former NHL forward and Canadian beauty, Aaron Asham. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What is going on in Nasty Land?
What's up, Riggs? Man, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, just coming off that Super Bowl game last night. Tom Brady's not bad, eh? Not a bad player. I tell you what, man. I can't just watching. Even last week or 2 weeks ago when they won, you know, and the quarterbacks he went through to get to the Super Bowl and then beat who everyone thinks is probably the best quarterback, Mahomes, who is ridiculously good.
Right.
It was like I saw those videos of him and Gronk going to the plane after, you know, the one win there a couple weeks ago. And it's like they knew.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, like, I did not expect it to be that lopsided. I don't know if lopsided is the right word, but I mean, 31-9, keeping Kansas City, under double digits. I don't even know if that's been done in the last couple of years, to be honest with you. But man, and then the first touchdown pass to Gronk. It's like,
oh my God.
I mean, it's like a movie.
Yeah.
It's, right. It's crazy.
Fairy tale.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a football guy, but I was rooting for Tom Brady just because, I mean, just pure elite status, you know. Jeez. And there's no denying it now for anybody.
No, I mean, I don't think
Patriots, and he just disappeared from there and went and did it, you know, with Tampa Bay. So, I mean, it's unbelievable, really.
I don't even know. It just doesn't even make sense. Like that, there's no way. Well, I shouldn't say no way, but I'm going to say no way. There's no way someone else does what he's done.
I don't think so.
I mean, what's he been to 10 Super Bowls?
It was
10 and he's won
10 going into yesterday.
Or something like that.
No, exactly. It's insane.
God, I was just amazed, man. Like, and you know, there was a time he actually said it yesterday, part of his post game, they had a rough November, the team. And I remember thinking, well, you know, they just threw this team together, you know, like it's not just going to be that easy. And next thing you know, they're Super Bowl champions.
Yeah. Amazing to watch. Halftime show was suspect, but
yeah,
got to work on that.
I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. I did hear it, but I wasn't. Nah. My favorite one of all time was Prince, man, because he played a little bit of everything. Yeah. Played a little Foo Fighters, played a little Jimi Hendrix, his own music. I thought that was really cool, but I didn't really pay attention.
For sure. We'll shift gears to some Fly guys. Three games last week. Couple losses there against Boston. Boston seems to have their number. Blew a lead. Devastating goal with 15 seconds or so to go. Got Coots back and pulled out a nice win yesterday.
Yeah, it was a really good win yesterday. Like they were scoring some goals yesterday. You know, it was, we were talking about it. They were having a little bit of problems putting the puck in the net, but they didn't yesterday. And old Scotty Lawton didn't have any issues doing it yesterday, which was awesome to see.
Yeah, it's nice to see him scoring in that line, flourishing. I mean, Farabee and Lots seem to be connecting. There's some chemistry there, obviously, and I think that line going, obviously, with some assistance, and now with Coots back in the lineup, I think those last two games against Boston, again, it's always shoulda, woulda, coulda, or you can never really know, but having Coots in the lineup is such an unbelievable boost, and I like to see this team being healthy for the next few weeks and see how they can, how they can play and stay consistent.
Yeah, I agree. He's a huge part of their team. I mean, I guess you'd say he's their number one center at this point, not taking anything away, from G if he's playing at center, because he goes the wing as well. But Coots, you're missing a lot when you're missing Coots. It kind of reminds me of back in 2010 when Mike Richards hit Krejci and took him out of the lineup. That was a huge blow to their team. I think that had a lot to do with, I mean, obviously there was a lot of things that had to do with us coming back and winning, but having Coots out of your lineup is not really what you want.
No.
But, Boston has had their number here so far this year, but I truly believe when it comes down to it, I think they'll be fine if they face Boston in the playoffs and everything. I really believe that.
Yeah, I know for sure. And get the cobwebs out now. I mean, they dropped all four games to them and they're tied. I know Boston's played two less games than the Flyers, but nonetheless, they're right there to learn from these games and continue to build. So a couple nice goals. One against the Flyers. I just want to talk about the Wilson goal. Just we were talking earlier just about how Ovi seems to make everything look so easy. But to walk around Phil Myers, who I love and really value his game. There's not much you can do when guys.
Wait, I mean, what do you do? I mean, Ovi's move is to fake left. He's the right shot, and then he drags and it,
shoots it,
fires it through the D's legs, and it's usually in the back of the net. But he switched it up. I mean, I don't know what Mizey's thinking there, but like you said, what do you do? I mean, it's you almost just got to be like, shit.
Pick a soccer. You pick a side. It's like,
it's not like it was some guy just got called up and walked you. It's like one of the best goal scorers ever, and it was a hell of a play. And Mizey's a great D man. He's going to be great for a long time, but that was just a hell of a move.
Yeah, that's definitely a highlight reel. And then, there was Austin Matthews tuck there, which was just insane. How easy?
Yeah. How easy does he make it look though? Seriously, yeah. God Almighty. I mean, I kind of do that men's league, but I didn't want to really bring that up again. But no, seriously, what a goal. And Justin Faulk there and St. Louis had a really dirty goal the other day as well.
The old toe drag coming from the blue line and make it look easy too, right?
Yeah.
Those are the ones that if the D-man blows that up and that toe drag, that pump fake to the middle doesn't work, and then it goes back the other way.
That's just it, going the other way.
Like, what the hell were you doing to shoot the puck, you know?
And Chiefs got him on the bench the rest of the night after that one.
Yeah, exactly. What the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
Oh man, some good stuff, and then a couple tillies too, right?
Yeah, man. Simmer, big Sim Daddy. He had a nice fight. Jordy Benn, he's a tough guy. He stood in there, and it was a really good fight. Braden Shannon, former Flyer, had a fight the other night. So there's been a few, yeah.
Yeah, and Coops too, right? Took 12 games to get the first tilly in, and Kubel.
I'm not real happy it took 12 games.
No, it's not.
I know the game. We know the game's changed a bit, but 12 games, man.
Oh, yeah. Still 12.
No games. One's pissed off enough at some point to grab someone. but easy for me to say. You can say it. I probably shouldn't say it. But, Cube had a little tilt there. So, there's a few.
He's got some strength, Cube's got that sneaky strength. I mean, obviously he could brush up on the fisticuffs. It's not really his role, but you could see at times there when he's like using his weight and pumping forward and back that he's got some crazy strength there. But it's a young guy, steps up and answers the bell. And
yeah, he, you know, what's funny, when he started playing more last year when I was still with the team, you know, some guys don't know who he is. This kid is strong. I mean, strong. And he caught guys because guys come in to hit him. And, Cube would see him and kind of lean. And next thing you know, those guys are on their ass. And you should see this kid hit a golf ball. Oh, my God. Yeah,
he's like one of those powerful.
Yeah, but and you know what's funny? His swing's so smooth. He just crushes it. Yeah. He does. But yeah, he's a strong kid and good for him for doing it, man. You know, he stepped up and answered the bell. Did all right.
Yeah. And going back on goals, I got to give Scott Lawton a shout out for his first Hattie. Kids made me happy.
He is, man. He's a help. You know Lawton. He's just what a guy, and he's really, his game's really, the last 2 years really is, last year and this year, man. Like, he's one of the, we've talked about it. He's a guy, you can move him up and down the line, you know, the lineup, and he can score. He can skate. He's a really good skater. I was really happy for him. He's one of my favorite guys. I love that kid.
Yeah, he's really finding his groove, and I love to see a guy like that have success. You know, after having what you would call, you know, I say a setback or some adversity as a first round pick, going back to the minor leagues, right?
Yeah,
going back and learning, he had the right attitude and learning how to take on more of that checking role and being more of a full 200 foot player. But now he's, you know, he seems so much more confident, and the offense seems to be flourishing because he's taking care of the other parts of the game. And he's capitalizing, which makes life so much easier when you're actually executing and scoring and getting on the score sheet. So I like to see a guy like that have success, because I think he was one of those guys that took a little bit longer to develop into that, you know, that full time.
Yeah, I feel like he's an established player now. Like, you know, people know who he is.
Yep.
And he's a hell of a player, like you said. He does it all. I mean, you know, he can kill penalties. Yep. He's just, I love his game, and I love to see how confident he is and how well he's playing.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, Riggs, let's get on to this interview that's brought to you by DraftKings. UFC 257 surely gave the fans the show they were looking for, and this weekend is sure to be just as action-packed. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's title fight, with 100-1 odds on either fighter to land a punch during the title fight. Pick either main event fighter to land a punch during this weekend's UFC 258 bout, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 100-1 odds. Just bet $1 on either fighter to land a punch, and if that happens, you will cash $100. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if MMA isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on basketball, hockey, and so much more. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code Knuckles when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 if either main event fighter lands a punch on Saturday. Place your bet and watch the fist fly this weekend. That's code Knuckles to turn $1 into $100 if either fighter lands a punch, for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Pennsylvania only. Restrictions apply, in partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer, and we are so happy today to have one of our good buddies join us, the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Asham. What's up, Ash?
What's going on, boys? How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing Thanks wonderful, brother.
Loving life. I hear you.
What's been going on with you? It's been a while.
Nothing, bud. Just been dealing with kids. Homeschool, started up in the insurance business, working with the Islanders, doing some NHL stuff, just trying to stay busy, trying to stay out of trouble.
There you go.
Which is difficult.
I was going to say that could be difficult.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you tamed down at all since you retired, or are you just still the old Ash?
Yeah, no, I've calmed down quite a bit, actually. The wild partying seems to be behind me somewhat, and just dealing with kids, man. That's all I can, you know, kids hockey, kids school, you know, dealing with everyday life of a retired NHLer.
Yeah. Full-time job with the kids, too.
Driving me crazy, buddy.
That's fun, isn't it? Having them at home trying to do school, man. I know it is for me with my little guy.
It's tough, man. I was never a, you know, a scholar. So it's
you weren't a good student.
Nah, I didn't mind it, but yeah, struggling with the ABDs of the ABDs of the elementary school. So it's going well, but you know they're. Every odd day they're in school. So it's, you know, I get a few days off during the week.
Nice. Nice. Same with Elvis. He, now he's getting to go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So he actually gets excited to go because your kid's probably the same, just so sick of sitting in front of a computer, and it's tough for him, man. It's tough.
It is. It's, you know, it's definitely mentally, you know, definitely has to mentally wear on him. And I actually see some of the videos rocking out with little Elvis. Great.
Yeah, he's a character, that's for sure. He obviously gets that from his grandfather. Skip me.
Yeah.
He's destined for big things, old Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah. He's quite the entertainer.
Yeah, no doubt. Right on, Ash. Well, we wanted to talk about your hockey career, obviously, and obviously getting to some Flyer hockey, but, you know, going back to your junior hockey career in Red Deer, you were a big point producer, and you also had some penalty minutes to go along with it. When along your path, did you realize you were going to play in the NHL and then you were like, you know, that much better than your teammates that surrounded you?
I think growing up, minor hockey, I was always, you know, it seemed like I was always a few steps ahead of, you know, the nearest guy, kind of skill wise, reading the game wise. And it just kind of continued to build and, you know, starts with confidence. You know, my first year in the Western League, I think I had like 30 points. And that's when I kind of learned how to fight, I guess, my first exhibition, my first exhibition game. In the dub, I just, you know, finish my check like you always do. And then back in midget and bantam, you hit, you know, you weren't expecting a guy to grab you and start tossing punches. And I finished this guy and then felt my jersey tugged and fists were coming at me and fell in love with it right there. And, you know, found another, you know, another avenue of my game. And, you know, I could score, I could pass, I could play, you know, good offensively, but I also had that, you know, that that fighter's edge where, you know, growing up with three brothers, you learn how to fight pretty quick growing up, and kind of carried me through my WHL days into my pro career.
Nice. And I was going to say, too, like the one thing I remember, you know, of you, when I think of Aaron Asham, like playing hockey as well as a fighter is your slap shot, your shot, and like your ability to throw a punch. Like you're very powerful. I mean, was that something that is like, was this naturally in you, or were you actually, you know, had someone teach you, you know, how to have proper technique with this and then, you know, obviously you can generate more power?
Yeah, it was just, you know, growing up with three brothers, quite a few street fights, you know, kind of just learned that way. You know, learned how to throw a punch at a very young age. Learned how to dodge a lot of them, you know. Brothers, you know how brothers are.
Oh yeah,
it's just, you know, I see it at home here now with my two little ones, and you know, you say the wrong thing to your older brother, and then you get a slap in the face, and then you throw one back, and next thing you know, you're rolling on the ground. It's Christmas Eve, and you know, you're scrapped with your brother. So it's, you know, I learned a lot that way, and then just, you know, just falling in love with it, and just I enjoy doing it, and just kind of went from there.
Well, Ash, I'll tell you this: like, I mean, we didn't know each other when you first turned pro, but you're in the American League for a while. I saw you there. I think the first time I saw you play was you were in Quebec. Montreal is obviously their affiliate and everything, but saw you obviously playing in NHL against the Flyers. But I will say this, you were a lot more skilled than I think people realized. I mean, you're a hell of a hockey player, and obviously you're very tough too. I think kind of like Riles, you both would fight out of your weight class, to be honest. Like, you know, sometimes I guess, obviously I never did it, but just being around hockey, sometimes you're the only guy that will do it. And unfortunately you got to step, I mean, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, because everyone appreciates it on your team, but you know, you would end up fighting out of your weight class once in a while, but you always held your own. You're a very, very tough guy, and people knew who you were. But back to my point was, like you were saying, your skill level, I don't think people understand you're a hell of a player too. You really were.
Yeah. I could, you know, I could keep up. That's, you know, that was one of my things. I could, I think I could play up and down the lineup. If it was to jump in for the first line or, you know, play whatever they needed from me, I was able to step up and do it. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, helped my career, you know, be so long. Yeah. I could play close to 15 years, 800 games. So for a guy that was, you know, not playing a regular shift, but, you know, being there, being a good teammate and, you know, Riles, you know, sticking up for your teammates. It's, you know, the guys in the dressing room love it. You know, you get a lot of respect from them, from your organization and from the league.
Yeah. I agree with you, man. It's hard to believe, to me anyway. Well, you loved playing on the East Coast. That's obvious, because you damn near played for every rival that the Flyers had.
Every team in the Atlantic.
I mean, I know. Like, the only team was Wash, I think.
Yeah. Wall of Shame.
Yeah. Yeah. But, Ricky Bond. But it honestly, to be honest, knowing you and being able to, fortunate enough to work with you and become buddies, I can't understand why, like, you were loved by your players. You were, like you said, you showed up every night. You could do it all. Like you said, you were up and down the lineup, but you always stuck up for your team. You're great in the locker room. I can't believe you played for that many teams, to be honest with you. I mean, it's great. You had a long career. You almost played 800 games. But it's funny to me that, like, even when you left us and you have to go to another rival and then you start shit kicking some of our guys.
Right.
Right. Poor Schinner. They're in pit, but seriously, like, I'm just surprised, because like, there couldn't have been a guy on a team that didn't like you unless you beat him up or something in the locker room. But I know here in Philadelphia, like, everyone loved you, and you were a great teammate. Like, I always pump Riley's tires, but it is true. Like, guys loved you and they loved playing with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to try to be that guy. And, you know, we, like, that year, like, those 2 years in Philly they were just phenomenal. You know, we had a great dressing room, you know, Bird Dog, Kimu, you know, Riles, Ricky Karts, you know, we had a great group, and, you know, we loved coming to the rink. We loved having fun, and, you know, it makes life a lot easier when, you know, enjoying where you are, enjoying coming to the rink. Like, our practices, like, we would just laugh the whole, like, for an hour and a half. As soon as we got to the rink, you know, it was just nonstop laughing, and
it was fun,
and we came so close, and it was definitely tough leaving, but, you know, I got to play at Pitt for a few years and experience that, and then went to the Rangers, and you know what happens when you go to the Rangers. You go there to die. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I always think back. I remember, fortunately enough for Claude Giroux, he had you as a winger. I mean, look what he's done over his career. And I mean, I would say he owes it all to you.
I think so. You know, G was, you know, he came into the league, you know, he came in with a bang, you know, with all the stuff that was going on back then. And, you know, he's just a top-notch player. He turned into just an unbelievable, you know, we've seen it when he was young, you know, his first year there with him and JVR, you know, you could see the skill, you could see, you know, how good he was. It was just a matter of him putting it together. And, you know, I got to play with him for most of the year in the playoffs, and we built a little chemistry, and, you know, it was definitely fun to play with a guy with, you know, with that vision and, you know, desire to win.
Created some space for him for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a couple of tap-ins, back doors were always nice. So, you know, it was definitely nice playing with him and Reamer.
And, you know, to Nasty's point earlier, you know, your skill level, you know, people don't realize, you know, to stay in this top two lines consistently, I mean, you're going up against the best players in the world, right? I mean, the skill level is insane. So, you know, for you to have such, you know, high skill level and, you know, playing generally, I think besides maybe your first year with the Islanders, I'm not sure exactly what line you played on, but you're probably on, you know, at least the top three lines. But, you know, I think a good chunk of your, at least the tail end of your career, you landed up being, you know, third, fourth line guy. But, you know, the consistency and but just that consistency on the ice and within the locker room, it's not an easy job by any means, right? I mean, the fact that you have to perform at, you know, at a certain standard of performance, and then, you know, to, when things aren't going well, still have a smile on your face and show up and be a good team guy. You know what I mean? Like, for you to do that for 15 years is, you know, is impressive for sure.
Well, it's tough, like, especially towards, you know, seems like the last half of my career was, I was playing like 7-8 minutes a game. And you know how it is. It's, you know, you're sitting on that bench for 20 minutes and they give you a tap saying, hey, let's go, give us a shift, and your legs are 100 pounds each.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get around that.
He's up.
Trying not to mess up. You go out there and you try to start some shit. And but you know, I think that was the toughest thing, is just getting that tap with, you know, you're sitting on the bench for 20-30 minutes and they expect you to go out there and do something dynamic, and just trying to get up and down the ice without making a fool of yourself. So I think those were the toughest parts. And then, you know, just the locker room was easy, like being, you know, being a good guy and, you know, being nice to everyone and the staff, and, you know, you just treat everyone right. And it rubs off on people. And it's, you know, I was lucky enough to play with every team in the Atlantic Division, which is a record, by the way.
I was going to say that.
It says, you know, it has to say something about, you know, about you as a person. So,
you wanted,
you know, it's,
yeah,
yeah. I just wanted a cup, man. Like, that's, that was the biggest thing, is, you know, I just wanted to win a cup so badly, and it still just kills me that I didn't.
We were so close in 2010. We were talking to Richie the other day, and definitely not taking anything away from Michael Layton and Brian Boucher, because they carried us.
No. Yeah.
They carried us. I mean, they were both phenomenal. Poor Boosh gets hurt. You know, Lates comes into that series. What a series, man, with Boston. We talked about that a little bit before, but I mean, that was just one of the best times I've ever had. You know, we get that one game, and then all of a sudden it's like, you're still down 3-1, but we just had, you guys just were a confident, fun group. It was never, no one was down. Even when we went down 3-3 rip, I mean, it wasn't like heads hanging, you know, walking around the room. It's like, well, if we get to the next one, you never know. And then sure enough, you know, one thing leads to another. But man, that was a great year. And it was tough losing, you know, in the finals. But back to my point, like, not taking anything away from Boosh and Lates, but Richie had said, you know, if we had, he thinks if we'd have had Ray, you know, Ray Emery.
I think definitely if we had Uncle Ray, we would have won that.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, not taking anything away against Later and Boosh, but Boosh goes down with a knee injury, and, you know, Layton steps in, and it just seemed like in the finals, just the pressure, and, you know, like, Chicago was good.
They were a good team.
They were good, but, you know, we were right there. I think for the most part, we, you know, we outplayed them, and they just got their bounces, you know, a couple goals here and a couple goals there, and,
yeah,
you know, and that's it. And
yeah, I remember, I don't know the last time, you guys may know, but game one, would we lose 7-6, 6-5? That never happens in the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, both, it was just back and forth. I mean, Naomi and Lates had a tough, you know, I mean, just every, or either they were great shots. I don't know. But that, I just remember thinking, holy shit, I didn't expect this. I know they're offensive. We had a good I mean, we had an offensive team as well. I mean, look at the lineup we had. And we also spoke about Riley and I and Mike Richards about breaking that team up. I felt like, you know, I'm not a GM, I'm an equipment guy, but it just felt like we were right there. You know,
we just needed right a healthy goalie.
Yeah. And even the next year, you know, then the next year we lose to Boston, who won the cup, and they were a great team. But, you know, we were missing Pronger, which is obviously huge. I mean, he was obviously one of the biggest presence probably that we had on that team. You know, he's logging 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
But anyway, we just felt like, gosh, man, if we could have maybe held on to that team another year, you know, Richie just said, I felt like we were right there. But then he goes on to win too anyway, so what's he care?
Yeah, no kidding, right? him and Karts going.
Just yeah, like right.
Too, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I felt the same thing. I was hoping I was going to be able to come back and we're going to have another crack at it. And really decided to go a different direction and I signed with Pitt. And, you know, it was, did we play you guys the first year or was that my second year? I think that was the second year.
Yeah. I think that was the second year. I was going to ask you, I've been able to fortunate enough to meet Sid and kind of know him a little bit. Like what a great guy, man. I mean, people in Philly don't want to hear that, but I mean, this guy, he is an amazing human being. But what was it like practicing every day with him, playing with him? Like that had to be amazing.
It was great to be a part of. Like this guy works. Like he comes to the rink. He's a great guy, like loose, but you know, he works and he wants to win. Yeah. His work ethic. He's a great guy to everyone. You know, everyone wants to get on him about all this, just about Sid, but he's just a top notch guy, great human being, loves to win. And, you know, he's won everything. He's, he can win and, you know, he's still one of the top dogs in the league. So can't say nothing too bad about Sid and you know, the way he plays the game.
Yeah. If you watch him, like you guys obviously played the game, you know, he does. When I would get, obviously I was on the bench for 25 years, but watching the game and watching you guys play, you start to pick up things where like Sid does these little things that no one can do or, you know, a handful of guys could do, I should say. And I don't think a lot of fans even realize it, but obviously you played with him. You probably saw shit like that every day. It just became like, yeah, well, that's what he does, you know.
It's amazing, like the way he can pick up a puck going, you know, full steam ahead with like back skate, no problem. It's just but he works at it. He works like he's on the ice, he's before, he's after, he's working on the little things, and you know, that's what makes him great. Like that's what makes great players great, is, you know, the work ethic, the commitment to win. I wish I had that, because I was never a gym rat. You know, I'd start skating in August, you know, the 1st of August to get in shape, you know. I hated going into the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, building off that, Ash, I mean, I think this is a perfect, a conversation about, you know, the combination of like natural skill, and then paired with not just hard work, but like smart work. Cause I mean, I look at myself and I certainly didn't have anywhere near the skill that any of these guys had, including yourself, Ash. I worked hard, but I didn't work smart. But you know, when you pile all three of these things together, because there's hard work and there's like that grunt work that's not necessarily going to equal success. You're just pouring hard work in the gym, but like you look at like some of the practice videos of Sidney Crosby, and like, again, like you said, like picking up pucks in his skates, full speed, and like getting bad passes and bad angles. Like he practices all these little things that most guys don't practice. I mean, look at like youth hockey all the way through Western Hockey League and, you know, junior hockey and college hockey. Like he practices all these small little things. So he's putting in the actual work, but it's like smart work, right? I mean, it's like, it's stuff that happens every single game. Like hockey's a freak sport sometimes where pucks are bobbling, and it's amazing, but like it should be like something that kids really pay attention to, because you can have natural ability, but if you pour in the rest of it, you're going to be just like, you know, you're going to stay the same, or you might grow a little bit. But when you pour in hard work, that attitude that he has, the willingness to win, but then again, that smart work, it's like, it's powerful, you know? And I think I see that a few amongst a few of these elite players, including G. You know, it's something really to highlight because most people don't realize how much is poured into being that good.
Well, yeah, they, you know, they work on game situation stuff, like small area game, stick handling in a, you know, small area, or picking up a puck in a small area, shooting in stride. You know, I watch a lot of practices and stuff here on the island, and I do a lot of lessons, and I just try to work off of game situations. You know, I see guys doing figure eights and doing all this stuff with the puck, bouncing the puck. Like, I just try to do small area game situation. You know, how many times are you going to be able to go through your legs and flip it up to your stick and
off
your shoulder and
back to your stuff? Yeah.
You know, you do that in junior, you're going to get your head taken off, or, you know, so I try to teach these kids just small area game situation stuff and, you know, go from there. But these great players, that's what they do. They constantly working on, you know, their weaknesses in practice, and, you know, eventually they don't have any weaknesses, and, you know, they just hone your skills, and, you know, that's why the big dogs make the big bucks, and, you know, it's nonstop. It's 10, 11 months of the year for them.
That's it. He almost successfully he almost became successful at doing the reverse backhand Michigan play the other day. And it's like, you know, you wouldn't be able to even think about trying something like that unless you've done it 1,000 times in practice, right? I mean, to have confidence to do that.
That's all my kids do now, is they're going around the net trying to do this Michigan thing.
And, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is it still the Michigan thing, or is it the, you know, I guess it is. I mean, that was the first guy to do it.
I don't know what the heck they're doing, but it drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's when he did that the other day. Well, you know, Ash, you've seen his stick. I have a few of them. I mean,
yeah,
you can play right or left-handed. I mean, with that stick, which is something else that people probably don't know. I mean, like, his stick, what everyone else uses is with the curves.
He's got a straight blade, and he can fire it, and he's just...
He's deadly with his shot, too. His backhand, he's definitely got the best backhand. It's unreal.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, right, not bad.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, I wanted to shift gears, Ash, on you. And we had Hartnell on for episode one, and he talked about a race, whether it was before or after practice when you were with the Flyers.
And
he told a one-sided story where he claims he beat you. We need to hear the full story. We need to hear the second side of the story.
So I don't know how the race brought up, but Harsey doesn't look fast. Like, when he was out there, I'm like, we started arguing about something. And I was like, there's no way. He was like, I'm faster than you. He's like, let's race then. I was like, let's do it then. So we can end up racing. He's fast. He looked slow, but he was fast. So we had a race, and I think, like, I was back, like, a lot. I pulled up with, like, a hammy or something. But, yeah. But he hammered me.
Oh,
you lose because you had a tight hammy or dehydrated hammy? Or
I couldn't believe how fast he was.
He thought you might. I think his words were, I think Ash may have been a little hung titty that day or something like that. I can't remember, but
there's probably a good chance of that. Yeah. But yeah, it was fun. Let me tell you, those guys, that group we had, it was
awesome.
It was just a nonstop laughs in the dressing room, and we had the sauce practice where everyone just threw sauces all practice, and Johnny was going crazy. Right. Only sauce, and then we went to backhand sauce. And
how about practice when you guys would rip, especially Hartsy, would rip hard wristers / slap shots at Jack McElhardy's top.
Who wants it?
Trying to knock down Jack Mac. Oh, God.
I used to love walking out there right when you guys started, just to straighten the sticks up, and you guys are just doing your normal little laps, you know, just kind of talking and getting going. And all you would hear was Bucky slamming his stick going, who wants it? Who wants it? He's trying to pass it to you guys, and you guys are just ignoring him. And then all of a sudden you guys are firing half slappers at his feet. What a great man he was.
That was a when I found out that he passed, that was a tough day, you know.
It was.
I just love that guy. He was just one of the boys, and you know, he liked to suck him back as well. And you know, I just love busting his balls every day and coming.
He loved it too, you know.
He was just one of the boys, and Jack Mack. He was definitely a beauty. Someone that I'm gonna miss, man. Just a good dude.
It was great. Since he wasn't coaching, the Flyers had hired him. He was a Western scout out there.
Yeah.
So it was great. Every time we went into Van, we usually stayed a few days, and we always saw Bucky until we didn't see him last year. He wasn't feeling well, but I did talk to him at the time. He's like, I don't want to get sad, but he wasn't able to come and see us, but he said, I'll be fine. Don't worry. You know, I'll catch you next time. And, you know, that was Bucky anyway, but, he was awesome, man. That purple stash at the end of the night from his red wine was, you walk into the bar, you see him, you could hear him from outside of the hotel or wherever you were, but,
it was always nice in morning skates. I'd just go sit by him, and coaches wouldn't know who stunk me or Bucky.
So my dad, Sudsy Suttlemeyer, was a trainer. He had Bucky as a player, and he tells me stories about Bucky all the time. But there's one, I don't know if I ever told you this, Ash, I may have, but they're downtown, and they used to go to this place in Philly. I can't remember the name of it, but it was one of those, they're all at the bar, and the coach, they were supposed to practice, but he said, day off, because they had just gotten shit kicked the night before. And he said, all right, we need a team outing. We're going to watch football. So everybody had to go to the bar. So there's games going on, and they're sitting at the bar. Well, you know, when you go in some bars and there's like a mirror, but then all the booze is sitting there. So my old man says he's sitting with Bucky, and they're watching the football, and everything's going on. He's been there a couple hours, and Bucky's just crushing them, just, you know, fucking getting her going. And all of a sudden, he's just looking at the bottles in the mirror. And my dad says, Bucky, what are you doing, man? He says, this fucking guy's been staring at me for 5 minutes. It was him. Oh, it was his. He was looking through the bottles, and it was a mirror, and all he could see was himself looking, and he was that buckled. He's like, this guy's looking at me. I'm gonna grab him. My dad goes, that's you. That's a mirror right there.
that's classic Bucky. Like there are some times where we would roll into the rink or roll into a hotel at 3 a.m. and he's still sitting at the bar.
Fishing out some foot massages.
That was good though. You come to the rink and you knew someone was always going to look just a little bit worse than you, and that was usually right. Bucky. So
the one night we were in Carolina and you two were not playing. So I happened to join you guys for a few cocktails, me and one of my buddies, and we got back. It was actually earlier in the night before we actually left, but he had been getting after it for a while. And I just remember being in the lobby hearing him going, yeah, you're the kind of guy I'd like to hang around with. So I walked in and stuck my head in. It was this gentleman. He was about 93 years old, and his wife was with him, and they were literally that old, and they were in there drinking with Bucky, and he had his arm around this guy. He looked like so fragile. Bucky's grabbing him, and his mustache is already purple. Oh, fuck, was he funny, man.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He was a great guy. Actually, we did play that next day. I played. It was an afternoon game.
Oh, yeah.
I think I played too. That was a preseason game, was it not?
That was a preseason game.
A 3 o'clock game too.
Oh, I didn't think you
guys 1 o'clock game.
It was a 1 o'clock game.
O'clock game. Oh. I think we got in at around 6.
And done, yeah.
Yeah, shoved down some brekkie and then off to the rink.
I forgot. I didn't think you guys played that
game. Hard to believe we did that stuff.
Oh, my God. I remember Bucky on the bench. That was the day of the old famous, just a little tired. He came into the rink, but I'll never forget in the first period, you know, he was doing the D, you know, coaching the D. And he said something. It was not in English because he was still crippled. And I think it was Chemo turned around and looked and said, "What did you just say?" And he's like, yeah, you know, like, and he's tapping guys, and I'm like, oh my God, I had a towel up over my face, and I was laughing, and I just looked at him, and he was kind of giggling. I'm like, Jesus, man, you gotta be able to put a sentence together here.
That bench must have stunk so bad.
Oh my God.
There's like,
right?
There's like five of us out.
Yeah, right.
Like five or six of us out. And yeah. It was a lot of rouge. Yeah. A lot of rouge.
Downtown Raleigh.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, let me tell you. That's a good spot.
Yeah.
Good spot.
Really good spot.
It was like that time where we couldn't win on the road. We were like, started off 0-6 on the road. So we had like a little team party. Me, Bird Dog, we had all the guys. We go out and go for dinner, do our thing, get drunk, go to the bars. We ended up winning like 14 in a row on the road. we're out every night. Because once you get that first win, you can't break tradition.
So you can. You got to play guilty, man.
So we ended up playing like winning like 12 or 13 on the road in a row, and we're out every night getting shellacked. So it was good times.
I was
turned our season around.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. I was talking to Scotty Hartnell earlier this morning, and I told him, you know, you were coming on, and he wanted me to ask you. He's like, ask Ash, why was his name on the road Darren Trasham?
It's a good question.
I'm like, why would anybody say that?
Probably knew stories he just told. Might have something to do.
He told me to bring it up, though.
They all know Aaron Ash, and you got to switch it up on the road, right?
Yeah, that's Darren. Right.
Darren. Yeah, and that was Bird Dog's nickname for me on the road, yeah.
And he also wanted me to remind you of the time he shit-kicked you when he was in Nashville.
Oh, my God. Don't. This guy, the ref saved his life. I had him over those boards, and he was starting to flail. The rest of it, oh my God! Oh,
I gotta see the clip.
Watch it. He, you know how he comes in boogie going crazy. So I got my balance. I was waiting for him. And I got him over the boards, and he starts flailing his hands, and fucking the refs come in and break it up. Pigeon.
We'll show the real version of the story.
Yeah, we will.
Sounds like you're telling the truth on it.
you know how Bird Dog is.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to come down to Philly and see him.
Absolutely, yeah,
definitely.
Where is he? Is he in his wife in
South Jersey? Yep.
Two young kids, and he's actually on NBC Sports.
Doing some TV. Good for him. Yep.
Yeah, he's enjoying it. Yeah, he did a little bit. He's been on NHL Network as well. So,
let me tell you, like, he's good. He's a good speaker. He's good with the people. Everyone loves the guy. Like, he's just perfect for that role, and you know, good for him.
Yeah,
you want nothing but the best for guys like that. You know, like, he's just the salt of the earth guy, and you know, awesome human.
Yeah, it's nice to get a different fresh look on NBC, having him in there. You know, just changes it up. It's more, you know, a younger guy that, you know, not too far removed from the game, you know, it can connect with the players and talk.
Where's the
modern game?
Where's the Mill Dog? Millberry, is he gone now?
he's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not with them anymore. I think he made a statement. I mean, it was kind of true. He was just saying like guys miss their girlfriends, or it may have been thrown a little different way, but you got to really watch what you say.
Yeah.
Can't say much anymore.
Well, you can't. You can't. I mean, you really can't.
No. So.
I was. I was doing. I was doing a little TV with the Islanders here with. What is it called? Something with the Rangers, the Islanders, and I did like four or five episodes. But you know, the first episode, you're getting nervous, and I'm starting to feel more comfortable. And my last episode, I was like, geez, you know, it went well. The boss guy from up top, you know, he's busting my balls. Like, hey, you know, good job. It's about time. And I was like, yes, fuck you, you bastard. Like, Joe, you know, hockey talk.
Yeah, right.
Never heard from the guy again.
Come on.
I was, never heard from again. And I was sitting at home and I was thinking, did he think I was being serious when I called him like, ah, you bastard? Like, is that why they got, because he was like, that was the best show. Like you're getting, you know, you're starting to come around thinking like, oh, you know, this, you know, maybe I can start doing this. And then call him a bastard and never heard from him again.
Maybe you should just reach out and say, no, I was kidding, buddy.
Hey, you old bastard. Thanks. I never heard from him again.
Oh, man. A short-lived day, 4 or 5 episodes. And
it was fun, but it was, I'm fucking not a TV guy, you know, got a face for radio. And so I was, you know, I was a little choked, but, you know.
Well, hopefully he listens to the Nasty Knuckles pod and he'll realize you were kidding around.
I guess you can't call your boss a bastard. I guess that's it.
Moral of the story.
Moral of the story is do not call your boss a bastard.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Ash, I want to talk to you about a couple of your tilts. You know, obviously fought some tough guys, had some big wins, and, you know, just curious on who you thought your toughest opponent was, and maybe talk about a few other after that.
My toughest opponent, you know, they're all going in. I was, you know, they're always going to be all tough, but, you know, me and you had a great battle when I was with Jersey, you know, that was definitely up there. I fought Peros, I think it was my last year, did decent. John Erskine and
big guys.
Yeah. Big guys. You know, the Erskine was after the Beagle knockout there. And,
oh yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So I knew I was going to have to fight either him or Hendricks, and I knew Hendricks wasn't going to come. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, big John stud.
Yeah, big John stud. Just so you know, real quick, I don't mean to interrupt your – I want to hear more about this, but Elvis, you know, when you sent him the birthday wishes? Yeah. So I had our buddy Cuffs, Ryan McDonald, he put – highlights with all the of you guys that sent. It's a 30 minute long, it's an unbelievable video, but that was the highlight he picks of you instead of you typing or something. It's you dropping poor Beagsy there, and he went to 99 Jim Kite and you turn and do that. So that's all Elvis ever does. And I'm like, all right,
I felt bad about that, but everyone,
well, it's in the heat of the moment though, right? Like,
yeah, and everyone thought that I went after him. I was challenging him, you know, like I knew this kid wasn't a fighter. I went up to him and I was like, you do that crap again, you're going to have to fight. And he was like, well, let's go now then.
All right.
Sure.
What do you do?
So, yeah.
And a perfect example of the power of accountability, right? I mean, he hits, I think, Letang on the play, right?
Yeah. He ripped his helmet off. And so you got to do your thing. I went over there and told him to relax and keep doing this stuff. You're going to have to eventually fight. He wanted to do it right there, so I was like, okay, good night, Jim Kite.
Yeah. the one good thing for him is he probably didn't remember. I mean,
yeah, well,
I mean, till later
I saw it on
sports. I'm sure he didn't feel well.
Yeah, that first one would have put him down. It would have busted his nose, you know, if he didn't have the visor on.
Yeah,
it was the second one that was right on the chin, and felt like I was hitting a pillow. Seriously, it was so soft when I hit him. It was just
the way he went down.
Yeah, I felt bad after. Like,
sure,
for a good week, I was like, why did I do the? I wasn't bad about the knockout. It was like the, you know, the stuff I did after.
Any night.
You apologized immediately after the game.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, Mario, I made you do it. I was like, no, I literally felt bad. I called Knoobs. I called Newbie up and made sure the kid was all right and all that stuff. And yeah. He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still playing.
Yeah. Won a cup. So good for him.
I know.
Exactly. Well, I think he probably learned a lesson. And obviously when, you know, you fight and you get in those moments in those situations, like, you're fighting, you're not trying to hurt. You're not trying to end anybody's career, you know? And then when that happens, the emotional, you get a big win. You know what I mean? And like, it's just like, people don't realize you got, you know, 20,000 people there, and you know, it's just like an emotional moment. So like, you're not like you would ever think about doing something like that. And
plus,
I think
understand that. Plus it was the pit and wash, you know, we hate each other, we had a good rivalry, and it just, it's something that came out, and you know, what do you do? It's over with.
Yeah, exactly.
I was in the news for a week, which probably helped my next year with contracts and stuff. So, yeah.
But you did show respect, when it's all said and done, you apologized and,
yeah, I apologized and, I knew I was going to have to fight Johnny the next game, which I didn't have a problem with. And so I went out there and did that. And, after that, it was water under the bridge.
Yeah. Interesting how it works. Let's talk about our couple of tilts there, Ash.
Yeah.
Like I tell people all the time, like when I fought you the second time their regular season, I was like, I don't think I've hit somebody that hard and thinking they're going down. And I remember you like slowly going down.
But he didn't.
Back up.
Just like back up and then coming back stronger. I was like, holy shit. I'm like, how does this guy not go down with that? A couple of these punches. And
oh, you hit me a lot that fight. Like you split me over the eye and I just remember because I knew you were lefty because we fought an exhibition and you gave it to me pretty good. And I was like, I knew he's going to go lefty. So, the only thing I'm going to do is just hold on with my left and then we're just going to go toe-to-toe. And,
right.
So, you guys, Jansen was out. I think he did something to his shoulder. So it was just me basically for the rest of the year. And teams were just coming in there and, bullying us around, trying to bully us around. And I was like, fuck this, Philly's coming into town. I knew you were friggin' freshly in the league. You're
right.
Just chomping at the bit to kill everyone. So I was like, but the funny thing was, Sutter, the coach, I was jumping out and he was like, Ash, he's like, do not fight Cote. I was looking and we lined up and he's screaming at me. I look back and I was giving him the yeah and I threw my shit right off. And we went.
Oh, it's probably good advice from him too, right? A bad trade-off.
No, I should have listened to him because it would have saved me six stitches. But
glad him tagging me at the end there, pretty good.
He was like, don't. I was like, I just, you got to give the kid, you got to do what you got to do,
Manitoba boy, you got to.
Yeah, exactly. So it was funny though because me and Setsy, we had some run-ins and. In Jersey, like practice times where like we're like FU matches on the ice together. It's just he wanted to win so bad, and I that year I was just a mess. I was just coming off all the shit that was happening with me, and so I was partying up pretty good, and it was just it was almost came to blows in practice. So it was it was crazy, but. It was, it was water under the bridge. It was just, we were in a slump and my game wasn't good. And, the team's game wasn't good and we were going at it. It was interesting for sure.
It's an emotional business, eh?
Oh, it's crazy, man. Like the highs and the lows and, you could have two goals one game. The next game you're friggin' sitting on the bench,
Yeah.
But it was one and done there and win Jersey. So I was happy to come over to the Flyers after that.
Yeah, it was awesome to have you.
Yeah, I think you still have my scar.
Yeah. Blends in nicely.
Yeah. My hair's getting too long.
You letting her buck or what?
No, I just haven't got a haircut in a while. Too lazy.
COVID.
It's getting to me. I'm losing my mind. I'm just ready for just to go to a hockey game.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
To do something, it's can only sit at home and go to the grocery store so many times.
Yeah, that's true, man.
It is. It's crazy.
About that time. Maybe the hockey will follow suit. If you can squeeze in 7,500 fans for the Super Bowl, maybe you can squeeze in a couple grand for a hockey game, start somewhere. I don't know
what's gonna happen, but I'm sure the league's not liking it.
The teams are
losing
tons.
What's escrow at this year? 20% at least, right?
At least, yeah.
I'm sure the players aren't liking that.
No.
When the game came on last night, the Super Bowl game, I'm looking and I didn't realize half those people were the fake cardboard cutouts. Yeah, right. And I'm like, how are they doing this? like, well, how are they letting all these people in? And then they got a close up shot. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Never. I'm glad I didn't say that to someone at the time, because they'd be like, you idiot. They close in on people. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, my bad.
How about Brady, though?
I was in Arizona last week, Ash, and it was like you don't even know anything's going on. Like, went to a couple bars. You had to wear your mask in, but after that, it was free for all. Okay. I mean, free for all. Like, not zero, like, zero, like, spreading out of people, you know, every other
social thing. Distancing.
Just the only people that had masks on were the people working there. But I mean, it was like a normal, it was great, actually, except for the fact that now you're thinking, God, I might get it. Just every, you know, like, no one's testing you when you walk in there, but it was a shit show, man. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it. I heard Florida's like that too.
Well, even trying to get into the rinks over here, you have to, you know, get gotten to do all this.
Yeah, we do that too.
Like, we just need to get this over with and get back to normal.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Our Elvis plays, well, he plays ice hockey, but he also plays in a ball hockey league, and it's outdoors, and they have three rinks, so there's always games going on, and they actually put a minimum on the parent. So I'm coaching a team anyway, no big deal, Ash, undefeated. But anyway, seriously though, like, we every week it's an email, one parent. You're outside, man. And no one's like on top of each other. It's such a huge area. I'm like, if there's one place all your parents or your family should be able to go, it's outside.
For sure.
I think I'm not a doctor, right? but no one's standing right beside each other. Like I said, there's three rinks. There's only 12 kids on each team. So, I mean, I don't get it, but I do kind of understand inside, but it makes me laugh over at Hollydale where Elvis plays. The parents can't go into the rink, which is huge, with huge bleachers. Like, why couldn't you spread them out? But you could go upstairs in the bar and everyone's all over each other.
Yeah, I know.
Because you can watch from the bar.
The rules are just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, inconsistent. Like,
yeah, we're traveling to Philly for one game a day, like, just to get games in. Our goal is drive 3.5 hours up to Hershey to go play two games and then drive back home. Like, that's like, you can't play in Connecticut. You can't play in Jersey. Yeah,
that's right.
Just started playing games in New York, where we have like three teams we can play. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it sucks.
Ridiculous. So hopefully we can
get back to normal, like you said, sooner than later.
Well, I haven't been home in a year.
Yeah, you and me both. Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
I got a 21-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old back home. Which,
that's right.
I'd like to see them within, you know.
God, you're getting old. I can't believe they're that old now.
Aislinn and Ocean, yeah.
Oh my word! God, last time I saw them, you were playing in Pitt. They were still not babies, but you know, little
11, 12,
your little girls, Aislinn. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my minor 23 and 21, yeah. So you should feel old too.
It's crazy, man. They're growing up too quick. Started young though. I was 22, I had my first one, so
yeah, I might have had one then. I just maybe don't know about.
Yeah, there might be a few.
I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
A couple nasty,
little nasties running around.
Oh boy, one's enough.
I got four, so it's
I gotta ask you, Ash. You know, kind of shifting gears a little bit, but going back to Flyer hockey, like, you played 2 years in Philly. Obviously, you know about like the Flyer culture going, you know, before you even landed up in Philly. Like, what were your favorite moments in Philly? And like, just talk about your time in Philly.
Well, when I got, you know, when I first got to Philly, I you know, you obviously know about the culture, you know, the hard nosed play, the fans are passionate. And I've always wanted to play with the Flyers. It's just, you know, just kind of like teed up into my game, you know. It was hard nosed. I could play, and, you know, I enjoyed the fighting. And, you know, I think that run going to the Cup final was funny. Me and Hartz, you were in the, I'm not sure if you're in the hot tub with us before. We're, you know, that was my warm up. I'd go sit in the hot tub and warm up the muscles. And we're sitting in there before our last game of the year against the Rangers, where we had to beat them to make it. I cold hearts. It's like, whoever wins this game is going to win the cup. So we're joking around, and we ended up winning the game, and, you know, we're made that run, and, you know, we're two away from it actually coming true. But, you know, that run, that the fans were just unbelievable during that cup run, and just probably the most fun I had playing hockey in a long time was that year. And, you know, I was hoping to come back the following year to, you know, try to follow up, but, you know, that didn't work out. But those 2 years in Philly were probably two of my, you know, most favorite years that I played.
Yes. You fit in perfectly.
Yeah, you definitely did. And you're definitely a fan favorite. I still, because that was the closest, obviously, I ever came. And, well, with the exception, I was lucky enough to win two Calder Cups.
Yeah.
You know, in the American League, well, I didn't win them, but the boys did. And I, you know, I was part of it. But that building, when we were on, well, it's starting with the Ranger game when we, you know, we pull it out. But Riley and I have talked about it before. Like, I mean, the place was just explosive anyway. But when Richie scored that goal, we were down 1-0.
The shift. Shit,
man.
Shift.
I swear, I still get chills thinking about it. I thought the roof was coming off that place, man. I mean, it was, I don't think I've ever heard a place that loud. Maybe you guys have, but I mean, it was, God, it was awesome.
It was crazy. And I had some buddies come down for it, and they're leaving the building, leaving the Wachovia, and they had their phones out taping, and it was just, it was mayhem.
Yeah.
Just, it was so fun. It was just, what a ride. It was,
yeah.
And you know, especially to do it in Philly, like, with right. the fans, and, you know, it was, oh,
that was, it awesome, was awesome. They, it was the, even I look at it a lot, YouTube, but when G scored the overtime goal in game three to put us back in the series, man, like, and everyone just came flying over, which of course is going to happen in an overtime game in the playoffs or any game really, but all those times, man, I love watching those videos, and just, you know, it brings back so many good memories of just
so
that
many
whole
good
team,
memories.
Man. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. It was just an unbelievable ride. I just wish we could do it all over again, and, you know, have a healthy squad and have Ray here, and, you know, who knows what we could have done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It was one of the, I felt the same way. You know, I warmed up every game and didn't play one of those games in the playoffs. But the feeling, like you talked about there, like it was very consistent, you know, across the locker room, that everyone believed that we're going to win it. You know, it was just, it was such a powerful energy, and obviously finding ways to win games and come back in series. And it was just a tough way to go down. I think it was just probably the hardest pill to swallow was just how it ended.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, especially that game seven in Boston, like,
right
down 3-0, you know, call a timeout and get a greasy one by JVR. And then just from there, I knew after that first period going in, when we were in there, we scored that late one in the third. I was like, I knew we were coming back to win that game.
Yeah.
And I think everyone knew.
Everyone did.
Yeah. You had the feeling, you guys had that. You could just kind of feel it being, like, a staff member.
Yeah.
You could just feel it too. The momentum like kept going. And then we had a goal disallowed, which I still think went in. It may have been you.
Yeah. I think that was,
or
that
maybe you're on the,
I was jamming away at it.
Yeah. I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like, I think I said before, AP was for sure it went in. Our Adam Patterson, the video coach, he said he saw an angle where it looked like the puck turned up and was just over the line, but I guess they called it inconclusive or whatever, but didn't matter. We scored a couple minutes later, and then, you know, the gaggy. What a goal scorer's goal there. You know,
oh my God.
He just buried that like it was his job, which it was. It was awesome.
It was nice getting him back to the playoffs as well.
Well, he went, you know? When he scored 5 goals in 4 games, we were down 3-0. He scored the overtime winner, game 4.
Overtime.
2 in Boston, one back, and then the game winner.
That was his first. I think that was his first game back. He scored the OT winner, right?
It was, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Sure was. Yeah, it was so nice, man.
It was a run. It was, you know, just, oh, it still drives me crazy. Yeah. It just bothers me, but what a run.
It sure was. Before we let you go, Ash, you want to talk about your charity that you got going back home in Manitoba?
Yeah, it's Aaron's Learn to Play. We're going on 17 years now. Just, you know, we do a golf tournament every year. You know, we would do some charity hockey games when I was playing. But we just raise money for kids that can't afford hockey, can't afford equipment, hotels, travels. We're there. They come to the fund and, you know, we distribute whatever's needed. And, you know, every year we've been helping around 40 kids play hockey and awesome. Spending thousands of dollars a year. And, you know, the golf tournament is, you know, is usually one of the highlights of the summer that it's just, well, you know, you've been there.
I was just gonna say, it's fun.
Riley doesn't remember though. That's the thing. He doesn't remember.
It's hard to explain, you know, but it's just a fun weekend of golf. We get the guys come down and we always do a lot of partying and, you know, hanging out with, you know, with the locals. And it's just something that I keep close to my heart and something that's been going really well.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome, important work.
Yeah. It's fun. You know, it's, I enjoy it and, you know, we're doing a lot of good things for the people back home.
Yeah. It's awesome. You forget how privileged you are sometimes, you know, when you get a chance to move up the ranks and play at the highest level ever. And then you kind of look around and you realize that there's kids that are, you know, barely even able to get blades on their feet. And, you know what I mean? Actually get a chance to play. So,
well, it's so expensive now, right? Like, oh, it's just ridiculously expensive. The gear is expensive. So, you know, it's nice to be able to, you know, hand out and, you know, help as many as we can.
Awesome. Well, good, yeah, good work, awesome. Man, for sure.
Thanks, boys.
We appreciate you coming on, man, and carving out the time. So this is
no problem. Anytime. Sorry about the technical difficulties yesterday.
All good, man. Next time, once this thing clears up, we'd love to have you in the studio and
oh, for sure, yeah,
face to face. So
we'll make a weekend out of it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, might have a problem shooting the podcast if we make a weekend out of it, but could be more interesting that way too.
yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll get her done. We'll get her done. Yeah,
definitely.
All right, brother.
Hey, boys, appreciate it.
Time.
Thanks, Ash, man. We really do appreciate it, bro.
No problem, boys. I might be actually down there towards the end of the month, so.
Oh, good.
Okay. Oh, let us know for sure.
Yep. Yeah, we'll grab some beers or some orange juices or something.
Riley will probably drink a water or two.
Yeah,
I'll have a drink with you.
You share some herb, rare ash too.
Oh, all right, boys.
All right,
thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. Right.
Later, boys.
That interview was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For all your skate sharpening and hockey needs, visit SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com and Body Check Wellness. For all your hemp-derived CBD and functional mushroom needs, visit bodycheckwellness.com. I want to thank Aaron Ashram for joining us today, episode 9 of Nasty Knuckles. What an awesome guy, great hockey player, overall character. Really appreciate him sitting down with us today, Nast.
Yeah, Darren Trasham, what a guy, man. Just was really good catching up with him. I didn't mention it during the interview, but I got to see him last year we were playing the island. Yeah, it was cool. I got to see him. He's doing a little bit of coaching and that, but like you said, man, great guy, great teammate, hell of a player. I don't think a lot of people realize how skilled he actually was, but he was a really, really skilled player that, you know, if he would have probably put more time into the working out and keeping himself in better shape, you know, he probably would have, you know, he'd been even better, but he was a heck of a player, stood up for his teammates, you know, just a really good guy too, man. It's awesome to catch up with him.
Yeah. It was super nice to see. And I always love his stories and his humor, you know. Yeah.
It's hard not to laugh when you just look at him. Cause we know him so well. Like some people, obviously a lot of people don't, but like just that goofy ass look he gives you, you know, and when you know he's up to no good.
Yeah.
I really missed that when he left, and I remember just when he was on those other teams, like we talked about every single team in the East, you know, he'd like look over at the bench with that just shit ass grin, you know, and he just laugh just cause he's such a fun loving guy, but it was awesome today having him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the baby face and he's even, you know, like if you didn't know he was tough, you wouldn't think he's tough by looking at him, you know?
But that's true. Yeah.
He's sneaky, tough, super powerful. Obviously he scrapped with him a couple of times and know him from before that. But yeah, man, he a solid NHL career, 15 years is not easy to do. And he talked about it in the pod there, like just playing that role and, you know, and learning how to say survive and adapt to playing 7-8 minutes a night and being consistent at it. Cause it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of people think, well, 7-8 minutes, I mean, you should be able to produce something in that amount of time. And yeah, you I guess you can over time, but it really requires just a level of focus and staying in the game and, you know, and being able to perform and get, you know, getting on the scoreboard in that amount of time. But he's obviously one of the best at that because he hung around for 15 season, bounced around the Atlantic Division there and kept getting jobs with some of the best players in the world, right? I mean, an opportunity
to play
with a few of them there. So always great to connect with him. Was it 800 games? How many games did he play?
He played, I believe it was 789. I mean, close enough.
Amazing.
Close enough. I mean, obviously they don't count. It's unfortunate for you guys. They don't count your playoff games, which I just still don't understand that. It's a game played. Like that always boggled my mind. Even with the staff as a trainer, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to 2046 and you just, I mean, obviously I never play, but for you guys, like Jesus, you play 7 preseason. I know okay. Don't count preseason games, but I feel like your playoff games should count for players. You know, I mean,
But I guess they just add that as like a secondary stat. It's like you got 2,000 games.
That's true, yeah.
Playoff games is like gravy. But nonetheless, just under 800 regular season games is a lot of NHL games. To Tango, some of the toughest guys in the league. And again, I don't know many guys that have a shot like him he has, you know, coming down the wing. And whether it's the half clapper or the snapper or the full on clapper, it's heavy, man.
It's like I said to you, I mean, 94 goals is nothing to jig your head about in NHL, but I actually was a little shocked. I thought maybe he would have had more, just like you said. I mean, boy, could he shoot a puck? God, he really could. But overall, though, man, like great career. Great teammate. You don't hear anyone saying a bad word about Ash, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, he's the ultimate teammate. You know, he kept the room loose, and going back to what we were just talking about there, like he just fell right in that gray area between like the second line and the third line. He was always able to go up and, you know, fill in some spots, but he just kind of stayed in that gray area of never really being able to be that top two line guy. I think his first year with the Islanders, he scored 15 goals and he was probably, you know, mixed between a second and third line guy, but
right.
A little bit easier to produce, you know, offensively when you're getting more minutes, but nonetheless, overall amazing career, amazing dude, and appreciate him hopping on with us. So
yeah, that was excellent.
Well, that pretty much wraps up episode 9 of Nasty Knuckles podcast. Appreciate you guys all tuning in. Until next time, we'll check you next week, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads, later.